Sometimes break it 1-2,
you don't stop. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Chicago Open Mic. I'm your host, Ian Ellis. Today, I am being interviewed by Chris Parnell. Is that it?
Eric Parnell.
Damn, don't worry about it.
It's all
Chris
good.
Chris is a guy that did my tattoos. Are you guys related?
It's all good, man. You know, growing up, man, I was... this sounds inappropriate, man, but I mean, it is what it is. I grew up with, like, all black kids, man. Like, I went to school with all black dudes, and for some reason, they always called me Parnell. Like, forever. Forever. Because my last name's Pennell, but they would just call me Parnell. And then, dude, for fucking years, I would go, it's Pennell. It's Pennell. But then after so many years, I just gave up. So fucking almost all of high school, I was known as Parnell. Like, it wasn't even Eric. It was just Parnell, Parnell. And then that rode with me until about maybe it was about 21, and then I wasn't really hanging around high school kids. But when you fucking turn about 20, 21, dude, you're not hanging around. Well, maybe you are. I mean, did you guys – how old are you? You're fucking young, dude. So
we got
26.
Vladimir here.
How old are you? Yeah, pick up the mic.
I'm 26.
Oh, so you're 26. Yeah. You're not hanging around still people that you went to high school with generally by 26, right?
Not really.
Yeah. So, dude, introduce yourself. Who are you, man?
My name is Vlad.
Yeah.
I'm from the suburbs. I just got into the comedy scene, doing open mics.
He has a new YouTube channel called Brand New Logic.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And, Eric, I'll say to you,
what?
If you're planning on making a career out of this,
what?
Nobody listens to podcasts.
I know.
Make a video.
Sure.
A video on YouTube version of your show.
Yeah.
And then the podcast is your backup.
Uh-huh.
So that if your shit gets deleted or kicked over by YouTube,
sure.
Then you have your backup.
Yeah, dude, I got video equipment and shit that I have for my basement. I bought a Meebo camera. You ever mess with the Meebos? The little Meebos?
Dude, I spent like $300 on a GoPro.
Yeah.
I spent about 5 minutes trying to figure it out, and it's been sitting behind my computer for three years.
Are you fucking kidding me? My wife bought me a fucking GoPro, probably like the first generation of GoPro. I could never fucking figure the thing out, dude. Same thing. I got a brand new GoPro that I fucking probably used 30 minutes of fucking something on it.
I felt so bad because I got it with my cell phone and I was like, I have to have this.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I just threw away $300.
Ian Ellis, right?
So my name is Ian Ellis.
Yeah.
And I feel like I should probably tell you a little bit about myself.
You don't have to. I mean, tell me about yourself then if you want to do that way. Yeah.
Well, you and I see each other a lot.
We see each other a lot, but we never say anything to each other. But it's not your fault. It's my fault. A lot of times, like, when I go to open mics or I'm, like, hanging out and stuff, I'm in and I'm fucking out. It has nothing to do with, like the other people that I don't like or anything. I'm so in and out. Dude, I've been doing...
I'm the same way.
I'll tell you,
that's bad for your career.
Yeah,
you should be staying here and glad-handing.
Yeah,
and
you should be hanging and stuff like that. For sure. But, dude, I've been in the mud so long, man. You know, I'm
How long have you been here?
My first open mic was like 16 years ago.
Jesus.
Damn. So when you think about I hung out in Chicago open mics when I first got here 14 years ago, probably for 6 years.
You were here Kyle Kinane and Hannibal and TJ.
I was here when Hannibal and TJ was here. I was here for about a year and a half before TJ left. I got here right when you would hear whispers of Pete Holmes was just here and they just left. John Mulaney, like people that knew John Mulaney. There's a couple
was
other
the Indian guy.
I was here when he was here. I was here when Pratik, he was here.
Not Pratik. That's so bad of me.
You're
the guy that was a guardian of the galaxy now.
Dude, I was here when he was here. I was here when TJ was here. I was here when I seen those guys and it was good. It's, you know what's good is those were the first guys. TJ was the first guy. TJ Miller was the first guy I ever seen crawl out of the mud where I go, holy shit. Because, dude, I didn't know TJ. I was in rooms with TJ at these open mics. He was a smart guy, man. He was a fucking hustler. He would come in, whisper to the host. He wouldn't even be on the list
Nobody
yet.
Nobody is
to the host,
famous
somebody
by
bumping
mistake.
Him in, and he'd fucking be in and out, and he would go to the next open mic all up and down the north side, and he was hustling. And I remember when he first got Cloverfield, right? Because he was starting to hop in and out of here to L.A. And somebody told me that fucking TJ, they go, did you hear how much TJ made on Cloverfield? And I go, no, how much did he make? He said 600. They said 600,000.
Woo!
And that was just a rumor. I don't know if that's even the real number.
Hey, man, that's your rent paid for a long time
but
when
dude,
you're a struggling-ass open micer who's eating ramen noodles and
fucking
begging for rides.
That we're at a table outside of an open mic in fucking snow right now on a deck at a bar in Villa Park. And that one of us or any of these dudes that are walking in this room behind us, this wall right here, that, you know... A month from now that they could be cashing a check. And I know that sounds ridiculous. People might listen and going like, oh, this shit ain't gonna... It happened to TJ Miller, dude.
I'll testify.
Yeah.
But did you ever go to Jack Calhoun's place?
Jack Calhoun. You haven't brought up Jack Calhoun. You're talking about Jack Calhoun, the comedian?
Yes.
How do you know Jack Calhoun?
Because I sponsored his room back when he was running it, and that was my favorite place in the entire planet.
I'm trying to think. Am I thinking
it was up on the top floor. It was a loft apartment.
Jack Calhoun that was, like, tall and handsome, and he's
a roast comedian.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Are you fucking kidding me, dude? Jack Calhoun used to heckle me at fucking. We used to do this.
Everyone, I love.
Well, he used to heckle everybody. But dude, there used to be an open mic for a little bit at the Mutiny, and it used to be on Western and like Armitage somewhere over there. It was a dive fucking Chicago bar, and Jack Calhoun was heckling me, and it was just like fucking eight of us at an open mic, 12 of us at open mic, and I go, Jack, if you keep fucking heckling me.
Thank you, sir.
I go, Jack, if you fucking keep heckling me, dude, I'm gonna break your face. No, I'm gonna do your fucking closer. You'll have nothing. You'll have fucking nothing, dude. He laughed about it, dude. But it was just funny because his closer at the time, like that was like his best joke, and I was like, you'll have fucking nothing, dude, when you get up here.
So since you've been around, we've probably been running circles around each other for 10 years.
Yeah.
When I started out. There was Red Bar. Do you know Red Bar?
I do remember Red Bar. Never went to. You're talking about Red Bar Radio.
Who had Jack Calhoun started the comedy club? Yeah. James Fritz, comedians you should know. Hannibal put them all, like helped all of them sell their CDs.
Yeah, those are dudes. I never knew Fritz that well. James Fritz. I know people knew him well, but I never ran into circles. And none against him. I just didn't know anybody that was, yeah, okay, go on.
Those were the big kids when I was first, like, a little guppy. I was green. I was thin-skinned. I didn't know what I was doing. And they were, like, the guys.
Yeah.
Drew Michael fighting a guy because he didn't like the way he got brought up on stage.
Drew Michael fist-fought a guy because he didn't like the way he brought him up on stage?
This shitty open mic, Casey Brown used to run it. There's a popcorn machine. You know Casey?
No, I don't know Casey. I don't know.
So, fucking Drew signed up. And then, but he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So he shows up late, the host makes a little comment about it, and he just lost his shit and, like, literally tried to fight the guy.
Yeah. Do you think he was going to fight him?
I don't know. Like, Drew,
like a lot of barking.
He's always, he's like a wild card to me. Like, he might swing on you. Yeah. I don't know.
I know that guy. I've been beside him when he was a Chicago guy, like, you know, been here, but never said three words to the guy, ever. He came after me. Like when I came to Chicago 14 years ago.
Oh, he's a dick. He's a dickhead.
I feel like Drew jumped in maybe about 2-3 years after I got here and I started seeing him pop it up. And dude, he worked hard. Clearly he's a hard worker. All those guys were those comedians you should know, like the Kilgowans. Remember when they were
Junior
doing the
Stopka.
Picture of all the Yeah, all those guys are hard.
Leibowitz is about to record a CD. Everybody
Mike
go.
Leibowitz is so funny.
Google
man.
That guy.
Oh, Mike Leibowitz is so funny, man.
He should have left. He should have been got the fuck out of here.
I thought Mike Leibowitz did leave.
Well, he's recording the album out here, right?
Yeah, but he's probably got a lot of roots here and stuff. But he definitely left. He went to New York last time I heard. I worked with him probably like fucking... He was featuring. I was fucking unfortunately hosting it probably 6 years ago. I think that guy left and he went to New York. He might be coming back. Who knows? He might even be here. You know how motherfuckers go, I'm leaving there. Then like they come back and you don't even see him ever.
I went to New York and I was hanging out at the Comedy Cellar at the table. And there was like 4 Chicago comics there.
Yeah.
This is fucking... I was like, I know all of you guys.
Yeah. So, dude, so you were obviously around a long time ago then, dude. You're like... You are like me.
All right. I want to give you a little bit of history because I'm like the best and worst person for the topic we're going to get to tonight.
Oh, we're gonna
and
to
I'm going to explain, you know, sort of who I am in this comedy scene.
Yeah.
So there was Red Bar, and then I started Chicago Open Mic.
Yeah.
And I was the first guy to just make a podcast.
Okay.
In the whole city, other than Mike, but Mike has
Mike
like
was the
real.
Red Bar guy, right?
Yeah. He has like real radio equipment, like professional.
He had like a real show. He had like a real show.
I was the first gorilla show that's like, this is a $10 microphone that I bought, and we're figuring it out.
You didn't know then. You didn't know.
Nobody knew.
Nobody knew at that time about internet radio, basically, what podcasts were. I mean, nobody knew.
So that.
It's like, how do you do that?
That became a huge thing, and like my idea was basically a ripoff of Mark Maron's show because I really didn't know any better, and I was new. I wanted to learn, and my thought was one day I'll pass this on to another comic, and it'll just become like a legacy thing within
the scene.
Okay. And people that have their first interviews here, when they become TJ Miller, hopefully they come back, and it's like a bridge to the industry.
Sure. Which is a smart idea.
Didn't work out.
Yeah.
I got burned out. Nobody wanted to take over for me.
Yeah.
So... I got sick of being in the city when I got burned out. I just, like, because I live in the suburbs, so it's like an hour drive, got to find parking, you got your two-drink minimum.
Land. Dude, to drive, if you're, like, say you live in the suburbs, just to get to somewhere in the city, it's probably going to take you a good 40, 45 minutes, and then you got to find parking and shit. But it's a pain in the ass. But continue.
So I started hanging out here in the suburbs, and in the suburbs, we only had the Comedy Shrine.
Yeah.
Shout out to Dave Sinker. It's a beautiful club.
Yeah, comedy club in Aurora.
Is it Aurora? Aurora. A lot of people get their first time there. If you are an aspiring comic, I suggest that for your first time.
Yeah.
They give you a real audience.
Yeah.
It's one of the sweetest open mics out here. Now, there wasn't really anything else out here.
Mm-hmm.
My friends KB and Leroy, they were kind of doing shows here and there, but, you know, they would pop up and then they would disappear and... KB got her start at the Comedy Shrine, and then when Dave found out she had an open mic down the street, she was banned from the Comedy Shrine.
Oh.
Petty.
That type of shit. I know, but there's a lot of clubs like that. It's basically blacklisted.
Yeah. And she's since returned. She now headlines there on the regular.
Yeah. Well, they probably seen their ways of, like, this is not good for business.
So I started a room called Mojo's.
Mojo's, yeah. I've done Mojo's.
Which is, that was sort of the genesis of the Chicago suburbs comedy scene,
yeah,
as we know it today.
Very true, because I felt like when I got here 14 years ago, it was can you give me two? That's very nice of you for doing that. Thank
you. Can you sign me up at six, sweet? Please.
But you're right. When I first got here, probably 14 years ago, there really wasn't too much of a presence in the suburb scene. I mean, there were suburb comics, clearly. You didn't feel like there was.
It was me, Gabe, and a guy named Johnny P. Gabe had the equipment. Johnny P had the audience because he was friends with bands.
Yeah.
And so all the bands would come and all their groupies would come and all their friends would come.
And they're people that go out. Those are people that go out and they know people that go out.
They party. They're looking for something to do every night.
That's right.
And then I brought the comics.
Yeah.
And it was this den of iniquity. Like, I tried to make it as much like Jack Calhoun's place as possible.
Oh, I didn't just know Jack debauchery. Calhoun had a spot like that. I must have unplugged by the time.
It was the last place you go at 4 in the morning. Drugs on the table, smoke inside, sex in public. Yeah. Paradise. Yeah. It was a wonderful place to be. Yeah. And he's heckling everyone. He's roasting you before you go up and as soon as you get off.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes while you're on stage.
Okay.
So we did that for a couple years, and then I went to L.A. Because I was like a 5-6 year comic at the time. Yeah, I was like, I got to go make it.
Let me go learn more.
I was out there for 9 months. Yeah. Did very well for myself.
Uh-huh.
Stunted on a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
Look up, there's a YouTube clip of me stunting on Anthony Jeselnik. It's one of my greatest hits to go look for. It's on Kill Tony.
Oh, yeah?
So 9 months,
It's on Kill Tony?
Well, it's on the E&L's LLC. It's a YouTube channel. People can go to find the clip.
Oh, I'm going
to
check it out, dude. Yeah.
While I was out there, I was engaged. My wife's back here. And the plan was for her to save money.
Very difficult thing to do, yeah.
She was, like, at the point where she couldn't afford food.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm out there. I'm struggling. It's, like, the hardest it's ever been. I didn't have a car. I'm washing dishes. I'm barely making my rent every week.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Let me go back. And we'll save money together for a year.
People don't realize how hard that is to fucking... To move to another town and try to, you know, be a successful comic and make your name.
If you're going to L.A., you better have a car.
It's so expensive. First of all, it's so expensive. I mean, you're going
New York,
to
I don't know how you find an apartment. It's $1,100 to, like, sleep in somebody's closet.
Yeah, you got to hit the pavement. You got to start looking and you got to try to find opportunities. And it's like a lot of things. You got to find the fucking cheapest, most expensive apartment that you can find. And then maybe your next lease that you jump in on, it's a little bit more affordable and a better option for you. So, yeah, it's very difficult for comics. That's another hurdle that people don't realize that comics have when they have to move to, like, another fucking town. But continue. So you move back.
So I came back, and while I was gone, a new crop of comedians popped up.
Yeah.
Nine months, every 4 months or so, a new crop of comics comes.
Absolutely.
And they were all very popular, and, you know, when you start going to open mics, you start hanging out with the people that go to them, and you become a clique. Whether you like it or not, those are your peers. You those are the people you start with.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The new group of people really didn't like me.
I've felt that before. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And while I was in L.A., I got a lot darker.
Yeah.
I got a lot of Ari Shaffir in me. Hanging out in the Comedy Store every night, it's a demonic place.
Yeah.
And my sense of boundaries and morals was a lot darker than the suburbs comedy scene was ready for.
Sure.
So the comics that didn't like me started going out and spreading whispers and rumors about what a piece of shit I was telling on me constantly.
Piece of shit, yeah.
And one day... I took Amy Blaze was you know, I saw her as like the head vampire.
Oh, she's the head vampire, huh?
And she was hanging out there, and I just screamed at her at the top. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. This is my fucking room. And she was like, but I built an audience here. Like, this is my audience.
Yeah.
Like, you've been gone, motherfucker. This is my room now.
Yeah, you don't, yeah.
And I was like, change, I don't give a shit. This belongs to me.
Yeah.
And if you shitting on me, like you don't belong here.
Take his corner back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you know this. I got this corner now. This is not your corner no more. Right.
So me and Amy had a falling out, to say the least. And we're friends now. We've talked. We've hung out since then.
Yeah. Funny comedian. Very, you know, good woman.
She does the Happy Corner podcast with Kimberly Marion. Mm-hmm. I got fired that night. I was relieved of my duties at the show, at the room that I created.
Yeah.
Fired from my own room.
Yep.
And I got kicked out of the comedy community.
Yeah.
That was my first time being kicked out of the comedy community. Uh-huh. I became a pariah, as if I had been making Kobe jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, as you're making, what's up, Giovanni? Hey, dude, we got an open mic. You want to run, jump on the open mic, man?
Here we have Giovanni. When I looked up your podcast, Breaking Balls, recommended podcast was the Lobo podcast.
Yeah, Lobo. Yeah.
You guys are connected in the YouTube algorithm.
Oh, really? So continue then. So then what? You get kicked out of your room?
So I got kicked out, and I'm public enemy number one.
Uh-huh.
He's a piece of shit. Don't work with him. To
what
the point.
What year is this? What year is this?
I don't know. I'm really bad with dates like that.
5 years ago?
At least 5 years ago.
At least five, six, 7 years ago.
It's to the point. A guy, his friend had cancer, and I do a lot of poster art.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hey, man, you're doing this event for your friend with cancer. If you want some poster art, I'll hook you up. Like, I'll just do it for free.
I guess they said no thanks.
They said, I heard that you're a bully and a piece of shit. No thanks.
Oh.
And I was like, my reputation is that much shit. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I get it.
So I tried to rehabilitate myself.
Yeah.
And I went, you know what? You're right. I am the problem. I'm taking it too far.
You handled it wrong, maybe. That's it. Yeah, right? You realize that?
Well, I knew that from the get-go, but it was like, it's not like that was the only thing that happened. Like, you know.
Sure.
I had been in this dark place that nobody was prepared for, nobody was ready for.
Which happens with comedians, man. Because it's such a long road, and it's up and down, because you're living life also, and shit happens like that, man. That's not a surprise.
So I really did my level best to, like, not roast people, not be a bully. Yeah. Like, to
that's
going to really
be hard because you're really funny, dude. Like, you're like a funny guy.
Funny doesn't have anything to do with being mean. You can be funny without being mean.
Oh, dude, I love being mean. I mean, I don't like being, you know, I like, but, you know, sometimes comedy can be really mean, but it's just, you know, like me saying something to Brad about how he got a new Pontiac in the driveway, and I go, this guy must be dating a new single mother. I mean, that's kind of mean.
Uh-oh.
But Brad Stupak, you know, the host of this mic, man, a Chicago comic. But it's funny to me that he, you know, I know it's, you know, it's mean shit. That's kind of mean. Like, somebody could take that and go, hey, fuck you, man.
What's it like when you introduce yourself as dad and the kid is like, you're child-sized. I'm bigger than you. My room? Get to your room, Brad.
Yeah. But continue.
Make me some fucking eggs.
Yeah, it's rough being a stepdad and shit, dude. No thanks, man.
So I did my level best to rehabilitate.
Uh-huh.
And one night, I was at Riddles.
Yeah.
And my buddy Leroy Hicks went on stage. He's a black dude.
Yeah.
And, like, this entire table got up and left. And it turned out it was all these people were here with this girl who had gone up before Leroy,
uh-huh.
and she was kind of a bigger girl. And during her set, she's complaining about being single.
Yeah.
So I go up after Leroy, and that entire table comes back, and I made a joke along the lines of, like, if you're a bigger single girl, you should try being nicer to black guys, because they're the ones that date you.
Yeah.
Which to me is a fairly timid, mild joke.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it's funny, but I mean, I get it, how people could go, hey. Again, with any joke that's, well, you know, any funny joke or any joke that comes with those, anybody can go, hey. But that's a funny joke.
So what happened is,
to some,
she started writing blogs, and people started banning me from mics that I don't even go to.
Yeah, but when you write a blog, where the fuck do you post it at? Just
Facebook
or something?
Yep. The Patrick? Yeah. What?
Yeah, the fat chick, Giovanni Diaz, okay. is now here. Yeah.
Don't be a jerk. She's a human. She has feelings.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm the nice one.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait till you figure out how fucked I am in comedy. This is what it's all building to. So it came out of that time a lot of people were very resentful of me.
Yeah.
And when I had Mojos, I kind of became a comedy dad to a lot of the up-and-coming guys.
Uh-huh.
And while I was gone, they kind of came in their own And then when I came back and was giving them notes, they were kind of pissed off at me.
Yeah, because they're like, I got it from here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, they're like, who the fuck are you? I'm funnier than you.
Yeah.
Bruh!
But again, like, some... I see how it comes off douchey. But just like being an adult, like, when you're like an 18-year-old adult compared to like a 35-year-old adult, there's different layers to being an adult. Just like being like an expert comic, there's different layers, of course.
There's levels to this shit.
That's a good way of putting it.
So... after I made that joke, I went to the washroom, I walked out, and she cussed me the hell out. I hope you die in a fire. Yeah, well, don't call her that.
You can't call her fat. You can't say fat no
the
more?
Well,
not in this
case. I don't even know who
it's
she
changed.
Is.
It has
like
changed.
An imaginary, oh,
when
I
we were a kid, it was like,
it's
boy, girl.
She's vertically challenged.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, boy, right. Girl groups make me sick, and if I catch any of you faggots in public, I'ma love it.
Yeah.
That was like a banger that we blasted out of our cars as a kid.
Yeah.
You ain't playing that song today. you ain't blasting that Eminem track in these streets.
I still think like the faggot word's way worse than like the fat word, though. You know? I feel like, you know, I don't think fat people are getting thrown off a roof or in certain countries. Well, first of all, they can't get them up there. They can't get them up there. They go, fuck, I can't even lift them over the ledge. Yeah, we were going to throw you. But continue. I'm sorry. You're right. Broke.
I said the other day... maybe all these serial killers kill all these hot women because it's too much work to hide a fat body.
That's right. There you go.
Just too many
That's
scoops.
So funny. There you go. There you go, man.
So after like a couple of days of this going on and I didn't know it, yeah. I started getting phone calls like, hey, man, did you know you're banned from this room, and there's a whole mob coming to get
you? Falling down a hole. Like people
all the comics that were resentful of me, yeah. All the comics that had kind of been misled to think I was more of a piece of shit than I am.
But you didn't wear it like a badge of honor? Like some people would go, fuck it, right there, dude. I got it right there.
This was a turning point in my life.
Yeah.
Where I realized, like, oh, I've been trying my hardest to be good, and you guys just don't like me.
Yeah.
This isn't about how I act. You just don't like me, or you're trying to, like, get one over me so you can be bigger in the scene, or whatever the fuck your motive is.
Yeah, 'cause there is scene
politics. It has nothing to do with who I am as a person.
That's right. When you start to, like, peel back the layers, because you know that you're a good person, I would assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. That same thing with me. I feel like if you peel back the layers, it's like, no, but I'm still good under here, although this outer layer shit's kind of...
So at that point, I drew a line in the sand, and I said, hey, Chicago comedy, suburb comedy scene...
Fatty's over here.
I don't give a fuck about you.
Yeah.
I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You ride with it or you don't, but get the fuck out of my way.
Yeah.
And since then, I have not been part of the Chicago comedy scene.
Yeah.
I am an outcast. I am my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to being a pariah, I have this show called With Apologies.
Uh-huh.
Started around 2012, and it's meant to be, the way we put it is like, if you want safe, wholesome content, you can get that anywhere.
Yeah.
You get it on the radio, you get it on TV, on podcasts.
There's plenty of it.
If you want something that's wild,
yeah,
that's a little bit dangerous.
That's right, where you talk about fat people.
We're the show that's offering that.
Yeah.
And we make fun of everyone.
That's good.
Which is Mike David's slogan.
Yeah.
We don't give a fuck. Hate us.
Yeah.
Since I've been doing that show, because we just recently came back about 2 years ago, I've gone super duper viral.
And is Mike David, he's the guy that did the Red Bar stuff, right?
He still does.
And
everybody
then,
go check it out.
But people hated Mike David for a while, too. It was like, if you're talking...
I was ashamed to tell people I liked him because the hate for him was so strong.
I've only been in a room one time with Mike David, I think, that I knew of. Maybe a few times. But you're talking like... I had an open mic at the fucking Cork Lounge probably 12 and a half years ago. And it was on Addison and, like, Lincoln. And that was the last time I ever seen that guy. And then next thing you know, you start hearing people... He got national recognition. What radio show was talking about him, saying he's like, oh, he's a piece of shit, he's a this. Remember that?
He was on Kumia's network for a while.
Yeah, he was on Kumia. Kumia and them were talking about. Anthony Kumia was talking about him
and
for
then
a while.
There
I was
like,
oh, this guy's still rapping.
There was a high school that had a football game,
uh-huh.
And they had downloaded the song Niggas in Paris. They thought they did. A Jay-Z uh-huh. song. Jay-Z, uh-huh. Kanye West, Watch the Throne.
Yeah.
It turns out they downloaded a song that Mike David wrote, which is the DuckTales theme, but he just says the N-word.
Oh, really?
Over and over again.
Yeah.
And it got played over the PA and became a national fucking story.
Was this hard R or regular?
It's hard.
Super hard.
Super hard.
Who is this guy?
How do you hard?
Well, this is
a hard R. Super hard.
He's part of the people that raised me. He's like one of the major comedy influences on me.
Mike David, because I don't know much. Everything I know about him is what I just said there, and he was one of the original owners of the Comedy Bar. He started with Kyle Lane, isn't it? Kyle Lane is his name.
Kyle Lane and Mike David start this comedy club, right?
Yeah, Comedy Bar.
Oh, okay.
Mike has this huge podcast. He was podcasting before there was podcasts. And he created a comedy club for the comedians in the scene. Mm-hmm. And he also created a record label and started helping them release their own albums. And he would promote it on his show and push them to number one on iTunes.
Yeah.
He did that for James Fritz, Comedians You Should Know, and Drew Michael.
Yeah.
And Hannibal Buress.
Yeah.
He didn't record Hannibal's, but he pushed it to number one. So they decided to destroy him.
Yeah, they did. I remember. I don't know what year that was. Was that like seven years ago, maybe? 7-8 years
ago? Now, he was not a nice guy back then. There was a lot of cocaine involved. Yeah. He was the kind, he wouldn't just heckle you. One comic, he was so mad at his set. When the comic went to leave, he had a bicycle. Mike went out there and smashed his bicycle in front of him and said, "Walk home." That's how shitty your set was.
Wow.
That's what a demon Mike could be at his worst.
Yeah.
So what they did is Mike was scheduled to have an interview with Mark Maron. This was going to be a big event for the show.
Yeah.
The day that was supposed to happen, they had put software in his computer to get all of his passwords.
Uh-huh.
They took over all of his sites, all of his archives, all of his computer, and shut it down.
Yeah.
And then they called his parents and told him that he was on a coke binge and he needed to be put in a rehab.
See, I think I remember some of this. I didn't know about the takeover, the computers and stuff, but I remember when all this mudslinging was happening in the local.
Then they told him, not only do you not have your own show anymore, you're no longer part of the comedy club.
Yeah.
They forced him out.
Yeah.
So they tried to not only destroy him, but literally try to get him to kill himself.
Yeah.
That's how fucking evil and wicked it was.
Yeah.
Kyle Lane, who's no longer around because he was beating women with toasters. And
I remember when that was coming out, dude. I remember when that was coming out. Was in the mudsling about that. He had an ex-girlfriend that popped her head up and said, he did this, he did that, and whatever. And, man, there was some real negative. There was people staying away from that. I remember when that was going around. People were just like, don't fucking, no.
So the reason the comics decided to be part of this is they had this idea in their head that Mike was, he put out their albums, but he was keeping the money.
Uh-huh.
And I think what they don't know, because I've put out albums,
uh-huh.
is it takes 3 months to get your first sales report and like 4 to 6 months to start getting checks. And so they got like one big check and then it was super less. And they were like, he's just embezzling the money.
Oh, my God.
Are we running out of time?
No. I just want to make sure it's still recording.
By the way,
I think we're on both these right here.
You're on both of them. You're on the Ian Ellis podcast and the Bustin' Balls podcast.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So continue, man. So, very interesting all right. stuff here.
Side note to that. I am with apologies. This is my internet show.
Uh-huh.
We've been making headlines. I have enemies. The New York comedy scene, the LA comedy scene, the Chicago comedy scene, all of them hate me.
Who are some of your enemies in New York?
Louis J. Gomez, Dante Nero.
Louis J. Gomez. That's what I was trying to ask you the other day.
We're not even ready for that.
No kidding. And who was in LA that's like your enemy?
Tony Hinchcliffe, Red Band.
Yeah, these are big guys, though. You're talking
Eric
about
Griffin.
He runs one of the most popular comedy podcasts in the country, in the world. And then
I got enemies. I got a lot of enemies.
Tony Hinchcliffe has one of the most popular shows and podcasts in the world.
So in this last year, I've been doxxed. My family's been doxxed. My wife's family's been doxxed. I've gotten death threats.
They get your address and shit, right?
Address, names, phone numbers.
Where's your address? Can we?
We're gonna dox you right now.
It's at Poverty Lane.
I don't. Why do they dox people? Because that tries to scare them. That they're like, we know where you live. Is that basically like that's like an old fucking?
They want to shut it down, brother.
Yeah.
There are three different people on YouTube. I don't know who they are or how they know about me, but they are making videos trying to expose me to end the career I don't yet have.
Yeah.
So I say all that to say, I know what it's like to be a pariah.
Yeah.
I've been on the wrong side of history a lot.
Yeah.
I know what it's like to be a gangster comedian.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the Civil War. Would you like to explain to people how the suburbs community is now in a civil war?
The suburbs, I thought you were talking about slavery.
What do you mean? I don't know what you mean. The suburb community is in a civil war.
Are you part of Comedy and Complaints?
No, I don't know that.
I'm not either. What the fuck?
Wow.
How are you guys not part of this?
So Brad has probably the most popular open mic showcase or room in the suburbs. He doesn't know about it.
So this week,
Giovanni's plugged into the fucking.
Brad also deals with an unusual amount of hate, where he has Redditors going after him and people like sending letters to people, anonymous letters that are like, "This comic secretly fucking hates you."
That's funny when Brad got that letter. People are so fucking crazy, dude. Yeah, I would love to know who did that. So go on, tell me what that is.
So there's a site called Comedy and Complaints. And there's like this civil war going on between people that think it's okay to make Kobe Bryant jokes and people that think it's not okay.
Okay.
And a lot of comics that you've seen like 100% on the side of comedy all the time, like always comic first, now they're being like, you've gone too far.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of like, you're hack, you're a piece of shit, you better keep that same energy. When I catch you in public, I'm going to hurt your face.
That's like the
I'm
new one, fuck keep you that up. Energy. I don't know what fucking
I've never
person.
Heard of keep that energy.
Dude, keep that energy. Dude, I watch what? Vlad TV. I watch Vlad TV, and the first time I ever heard that, I was watching Chi Ali was an old rapper that fucking killed his brother-in-law. He was like in New York City, and his brother-in-law was fucking talking all fucking big on the phone, and he goes, keep that energy, I'm going to come find you, basically. And then he went up there and shot him in the fucking chest.
Oh, that's funny.
But keep that energy is like, keep that energy. So when I see you next, it's like, what, you don't got that energy?
Oh, okay, I get it.
So when they spring on you, you go, where's all that energy that you were talking over the phone type shit on the internet?
Where's your Twitter fingers now?
Yeah, that's it. So okay, I didn't know that.
Wait,
I didn't
what's
know
the
that's
Civil
like
War about?
Sorry, there's a massive fight between people that think it's okay to make Kobe Bryant drinks.
Bryant, though, or is it just like just?
Well, here's the thing: celebrities die a lot. Comics make jokes about them a lot.
Yeah,
but for some reason, this one touches a nerve. Well, a lot of comics were big basketball fans.
Little kids. And people love
these are people our age.
I think his daughter wasn't.
I was wrong with the kids. That's all I care.
I think it wouldn't be as big of a deal as just him on the jokes. I feel I could be wrong.
But it's not like nobody's really making fun of his kids.
I'm really surprised.
It's really just Kobe Bryant
jokes. There's assholes that haven't gone, Kobe's not dead. He's in China.
We did that on my show.
You know, I'm surprised there's not like rumors of like, he's like Tupac, he ain't dead.
Isn't there a rumor that he got killed because he was kind of...
That's what
Illuminati, black conspiracy.
There you go. Shit like that starting to go around, yeah.
So he died about 4 hours before my show.
Yeah.
Now my show is a anything goes... We have our own sandbox, our own little world outside of what everybody else is doing.
Uh-huh.
And in our Discord, which is like our private chat, they had been roasting him for like 4 hours before our show started.
Uh-huh.
Just joke after joke, memes, Photoshops, everything you can think of.
Sure.
Shaq had his pants at half mast so Kobe could kiss his ass.
But in the argument of Kobe jokes, there's people out there that are not NBA fans. There's people out there that don't like Kobe. If LeBron James would die tomorrow in that same plane crash, there's people that hate fucking LeBron James. There's fucking people that hate, and there's people that have no connection, no nothing. That he's just another guy that's a celebrity, and they're sniping at him. I get that argument.
Here's both sides of the thing. It's like he died. I don't follow sports at all.
Yeah.
But for just like half a second, I was sunken in my heart because I was like,
oh yeah, it's very
he's
sad.
A good guy because he's that pervasive in the culture that even if you don't watch sports, you kind of knew who he was and kind of liked him as a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine if you have his poster on your wall and he's like the reason you get up in the morning.
Sure.
Your heart is broken.
You're wearing his shirt.
Yeah, people you have the jersey. I can understand, like, it didn't occur to me that it would be a make or break issue. If you had bet me $1 million, I would have lost. I never would have been like, oh, his death is the reason people are at each other's throats?
I think it's his age and the daughter and how he died.
And there is probably so such thing as too soon. You know, we always like, you know, everybody always goes to the dark joke and everybody goes too soon and they laugh about it. But this is pretty soon. So I totally get
so,
it. With
well,
the kids
it happened and then my show starts.
Yeah.
And so my show did what my show does.
Uh-huh.
This is our wheelhouse.
Sure.
Had it been anyone, we would have made fun of them. If it was Bernie Sanders, we would have trashed him. If it was Barack Obama, we would have trashed him.
Dude, it could have been the Pope.
We did what we do.
Drinks on me if Bernie Sanders went out.
Everybody else is mourning. We're making jokes.
Uh-huh.
I posted it the next day. KB got mad at me.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we're not fighting.
KB, which is a comedian here in Chicago.
Kimberly Marion, Happy Corner Podcast. I took what she had to say to me as like one athlete talking to another and being like, you're a better athlete than that. That was a bad play. Like, fucking watch yourself.
Yeah.
And I count on her to keep me in check.
Yeah.
Because I have this with apologies world and because I'm not part of the comedy scene,
uh-huh.
I can get too far off track.
Sure.
Like, we live in a really demoralized world, and I'm an internet guy. And in the world of internet, you got to be borderline racist, borderline hate speech, borderline illegal just to get a fucking laugh.
We're kind of like wild wolves. We're wild wolves. We're constantly looking for meat to like chew on and fucking put blood on our teeth and like fucking not be scared.
Clout chase.
And shit. There's nothing out there. Like, you almost got to be that. So, but every once in a while, you got to kind of have somebody pull back on your leash and go, okay, boy.
KB's the person that pulls on my leash. And yeah. I love her, and I'm so thankful that I have that in my life.
Sure.
So, I'm not actually the one that's in trouble. Ooh. KB got mad at me, but people really didn't bother me too much.
Yeah.
Apparently, other people started making Kobe Bryant jokes and bringing up the rape allegations.
Yeah.
And that has kicked off a massive fucking...
Which he never got... He wasn't guilty of...
There are comics saying, fuck the bookers court. That book comics that made Kobe Bryant jokes.
Oh, that's like so... like
if you, made a joke, you're a hack. Yeah. You're a piece of shit. You're a horrible
Says
human.
Them.
Keep
Says
that
them.
Same Who energy. I will check comes. You in your motherfucking mouth. That's what's going on Facebook.
Oh, really? I'd like to know who that is. Later on, I would like to see
screenshots
and stuff like that. I'm like, who that is. I mean, not like I can't, you know, whatever. I didn't make it.
Well, you guys are being brave now, but tomorrow when you post this episode, you might catch some hate.
For what? Talking about Kobe Bryant? I'm just saying defending why anybody should be able to say something about it. I didn't make any Kobe jokes about it.
I'm going
to
talk about this in my set tonight, and... the thing is, right now, you're not dealing with people. You're dealing with their pain.
Uh-huh.
And their heart is broken. And so a lot of people that you know to be 100% on the side of comedy, you're going to be dealing with, my fucking heart is broken, you piece
guess
of
what?
Shit.
And guess what? A lot of those people that are like, hey, man, I'm a comic and I don't appreciate that, I'll see you in 2 years. And I bet you might, a percentage of those motherfuckers won't even be in the game anymore. I've seen this so many years where like they're like, man, I've been doing comedy hard for 3 years. I'm like in the game, blah, 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 blah. And it's you don't even see them no more. They're gone. You know, they won't even. And who gives a fuck, man? Honestly, dude, it's been like, what, 4 days? I'm sick of seeing fucking anchors crying and shit like that. It's like, I don't want to see it no more. I get it. I was sad. My wife and I talked about it the last couple of days, and we're very sad. You know, we don't like it at all. But like seeing fucking anchors crying on TV all the fucking time, it's like, look, let's move on with, like, I get it. Do some big memorials and like whatever, but I'm trying to watch a slam dunk on ESPN right now. Like, fucking stop crying. Like, it's fucking up my day. It's making me sad.
I gave this a lot of thought. Here's the kind of the conclusions I came to. I'm going to talk about it in my set tonight. My set, I'm not even going to tell jokes. This is a State of the Union address.
Okay.
I love dark comedy.
Me too.
The darkest of the dark.
Yeah.
It's
good.
But
it's good when it's good.
I think it would be good for everybody to realize that that is like having a fetish.
Yeah, it is.
That is it's like, I like getting dressed like up that. In a gimp outfit and having men like peanut butter off my balls while my wife sucks my dick.
Yeah.
Weird shit.
Yeah. Well, a lot, yeah. And also, dude, when people are saying things on Twitter and stuff, they're almost trying to make the sick fuckers like us laugh anyways. It's not the masses. It's almost like somebody going like, oh, yeah. You know, a lot of times even at open mics, we're just trying to make the comedians in the back laugh.
Well, here's what I want to say to the people of the world that are like me, which I don't recommend because... you're not going to go far in the industry being like me.
Yeah.
But realize that what you like is a fetish.
Yeah.
And that Facebook, just like we're all into sex, and it's okay to post pictures of you and your girlfriend, uh-huh. but it's not okay to post hardcore pornography of you and your girlfriend. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's okay to post jokes. We're all into comedy.
Yeah.
We're all into fucking... but not everybody's into the kink that you're into.
Yeah.
And you got to be aware of that on public forums like Facebook.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of disagree. I get it. But I do disagree. I don't want to disagree because I get what you're
saying.
You
realize you're basically saying to people like, I like being fucking pegged in the ass. Oh, you don't like that? You don't like being pegged? You're Dude, fucking weird.
But there's people that say... you know, there's people that say things that will make others that read their things emotional, and has nothing to do with Kobe Bryant, where they go, man, fuck this motherfucker. And you don't hear those people fucking
one of the
letters to fucking people and getting
one
the fucking
one of the
Civil
memes
War.
I got was like, it's a picture of a guy, and it was like 9/11 jokes, Holocaust jokes, rape jokes, and he's happy. And then it went, basketball man dies, sad. Unacceptable.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're okay with all this shit yesterday.
Shit. Cops. Cut.
damn it. All right, keep talking. Keep talking. You can keep talking.
Did you run out of tape?
No, I ran out of battery. These fucking shit batteries that I bought at the goddamn.
Do you have power?
Well, I guess you're going to be downloading my podcast.
I have an extension cord right there.
Oh, no, thank you. I got it.
You should only buy Duracell.
I know. You know what?
That's the one thing I don't cheap out on is battery.
Probably starting at 15, by the way.
15, okay.
Do,
yeah, we're...
You guys do what you got to do.
No, we're going to close it up.
Hey, Brad.
Close
the... Yeah. Can you grab this and give me another beer?
Yeah.
And I'm going to hit him with the tip when I come back.
Okay.
All right, so Giovanni, you're currently on my podcast. I talked a little bit of shit about your podcast the other day. Did you hear it?
No.
Here it goes. Pick the mic up. We're back.
Sit up straight.
We had the battery cut out.
I'm on iTunes.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Ian, pick up the mic, please, would you? We're back, dude.
Podbean is my like domain, and you know this because you have a domain, but then you upload that to iTunes. So Podbean is like where I send it to. That's my backup. But it goes out to Spotify, Stitcher.
I clicked on the Podbean, and it kept giving me errors yesterday because Brennan sent it, and I'm clicking, and I keep getting errors, so I finally just gave up. So you're on the other stuff? Okay, that's... You don't put that on there, like... I mean, like...
I'm terrible at promoting myself. You actually helped me when you were like, give me some tips right now. Tell me how to do this.
Like, something like that. Hey, at the end of whatever you post, out on Apple, blah, 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 and all the platforms, put that... Because I'm thinking you're just on Podbean, like some people are just on SoundCloud. So I'm clicking, I'm fucking with... If I would have known, I would have immediately gone to fucking iTunes or Apple and then just listen to that.
Just put my name in iTunes, guys. You'll find me. I'm getting ready to drop my 11th mixtape.
What do you mean a mixtape?
What's amazing about me, mm-hmm. I perform stand-up comedy once a week. Mm-hmm. And I do new material every single time. And I'm not bullshit. I do well, I bring the house down, and I bring it when I write jokes.
Yeah.
Every 40 to 60 minutes, I kind of clip it up, the best of, and I put it out as a mixtape.
Yeah.
So it's basically 40 minutes to an hour of comedy.
Yeah.
I'm dropping my 11th, my 11th unique hour of comedy. So if you're someone that's like, I jerk off to the process, I'm a comic.
Yeah.
I'm a living legend.
Which is, it's good to be able to look into the window of that, because a lot of people don't do that, you know, where they show, like, their process and, like, how they're doing things, you know, because that's very valuable.
Each week I put out my set, so you can hear the raw version, and I think of it like I love Mitch Hedberg, right?
Yeah, I see Mitch Hedberg live.
If I had seen his, like, B-side tapes,
as a comic,
a fan, I would have loved it. Too. So you can see my B-side, and then every... 4 to 6 months, you get an album for free.
Right. Yeah, that's great, man. But get back to the whole Civil War thing. I get it. I get that there. I just think it's too soon. I think it's topic to topic.
Well, all right, let me bring you to the topic at hand. Ari Shaffir.
I don't think it's
ever. What did Ari? I hear you. I guess as a comic, but I gotta stand on the side of it's never too
anyone
soon, nothing sacred. I guess comics have to go back to the. It's almost a Ten Commandment.
But in this case, it hit like their wheelhouse, and it's like fuck.
Fist to mouth with the mic. Anyone that wants to understand Ari and what he just did.
What did Ari Shaffir
go listen to his podcast with Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yeah.
And Milo's very articulate. Yeah. I'm a fan of him.
Which a lot of people hate Milo.
Yes.
A lot of people hate
Milo.
He's
a pariah.
He's a fucking, you know, which is weird because he's a gay, fucking married to a black guy. He's fucking, I mean.
On that episode, you find out that Ari really admires his trolling because Ari is a troll.
Yeah.
And every time a celebrity dies, Ari will troll by saying something horrible about the person that died.
Yeah.
He did that for Kobe Bryant. He did a tweet that was like, he died 23 years too late. He's a piece of garbage. He's a rapist. I'm glad he's dead. The guy that failed to fuel up his helicopter is a hero. Hashtag fuck Kobe Bryant.
Damn.
And then he did an Instagram story video where he's outside of the basketball saying the same thing. Like, he's a piece of garbage. I'm glad he's dead. Now, Ari...
Did he get dropped from his agency, or is that just bullshit lies?
Let me paint the picture. The way the gods punish us is by giving us what we want.
Uh-huh.
And what he wanted was for people to be fooled by this troll. It's not a joke, it's a troll.
Yeah.
And I think he was expecting 200 or 300 people to be mad, but it wouldn't be a big story.
It was like a tsunami. It went into land and fucking...
The entire fucking world is mad at him. He has been dropped from his agency.
That's true, huh?
His representation. he was getting ready to record his new special.
Yeah, which is all about Jewish. It's all Jewish.
His topic, father right? was in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And he talks about how he makes Jew jokes and blah, blah, blah.
And he wasn't he in the what do they call that when what's like the seminary that they go to? He was going to be a, wasn't he going to be a rabbi or something like that?
Zionism.
Yeah, I mean he was studying. He was in Israel studying and stuff, and so he was going to do this special that was going to be great.
So he hasn't sold this special yet. In fact, as of his last podcast, he was asking people to follow him on Instagram to help him sell this special. Now he can't record it. He's canceling the shows because people are threatening to come kill him because of his remarks.
So they're going to kill him because he made a comment about Kobe Bryant. That sounds reasonable. That sounds reasonable.
It was a vicious comment, and it was a troll. He wanted people to be mad.
But what's worse? I've always thought this. What's worse, words or actions? In my opinion, actions are way worse. You can say the worst things, but the person that comes up there and cuts their throat, that person's definitely the worst.
Which brings me to our comedy scene. All you people that are threatening violence, you're embarrassing yourself. You're the piece of shit in this scenario. Cuss them out. Voice your opinion.
Say your piece.
But I'm going to beat you up.
That's right.
Bring it.
Is this whoever's the biggest wins? If I got the fastest gun, I can say whatever I want? What if I got the fastest gun and I'm a fucking asshole?
Not like this is breaking news, but where does that stop at, though? Because if they say, don't do Kobe jokes, don't do this joke, don't do that. And as artists, we'll only have a couple colors to paint with instead of all the colors that we should be all to paint with. And just let the society judge it.
Ari is canceled and comics are celebrating.
Dude.
Like after 9/11, when you saw the footage of Iran, they're dancing in the street.
Yeah.
There are comics putting up posts like,
oh, really?
Laugh, laugh, laugh. Oh, my God, he's canceled. I don't care. Yeah, oh, my God, death threats. I don't care. Fuck him. He's a piece of shit. Meh.
Yeah, I get it. But, dude, you know who's happy right now? It's probably Louis C.K. It's like he just fucking tagged him. You're it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you're it. And then now Louis's off.
Who's
the fucking...
really happy is Joe Rogan, because they just released tapes of him saying the N-word and making racist jokes.
Joe Rogan said
he was about to get canceled, and now Ari has dived on that grenade.
Well, I didn't see
nobody
you.
Cares Joe about Rogan racist N-word. Joe Rogan anymore.
Wow.
It's all about fuck Ari.
Oh, no. I've heard him say the N-word, like describing the N-word and stuff, but never where it's like, where he's like driving to a Chipotle and fucking saying,
I have
hey,
to use the washroom.
N-words. They moved next door to me.
This young man is going to take over for me. I'll be back.
Ian, no. Hey, I'm number two. You're number six, right?
Oh, shit.
Are we going to start soon? So tell everybody where the fuck they can find you at.
All right. IanEllis.podbean.com. Check for the mixtape, volume 11. Check for all of them. You know, they're all dope. Check out Philip Wave, which is my cartoon that I do, the Ian Ellis LLC, RDA, Ross Dog, with apologies.
Dude.
If you're into rugged, brutal comedy, I'm for you. If you're not, stay the fuck out of my sandbox. I don't want to hurt you.
Dude,
just stay away.
We're going to have you back, man. Got interesting fucking conversations. Giovanni, tell them where you can find Lobo Den, man.
Okay, Lobo Den. My social media is LOBO9110, and Lobo Den is... just the Lobo Den podcast. Look it up.
Yeah,
it's on everything.
Very funny, man.
He had KB on.
Guys, yeah, Bustin' Balls podcast on Instagram. Eric Pinnell Comedy on Instagram. Thanks for listening, guys. Thank you.
It.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it, man.
I want you to give it up nice and loud. This guy's got a podcast. Just Google it. Just type in his name. His name, give it up nice and loud for Ian. Is Ian Ellis, everybody.
You guys like helicopter jokes?
Woo. Oh, yeah.
Wait, what? Turns out since Kobe Bryant died, a lot of people do not. They're not helicopter enthusiasts, and they don't give a fuck about your opinion. And you should probably kill yourself if you have a joke about them. Tonight's going to be a little bit weird because recently, Kobe has died. And that has caused a civil war in the Chicago suburbs comedy community. People are at each other's throats. People are getting canceled left and right. There's a whole lot of posts about you better keep that same energy. Hope you got those jokes when I'm hitting you in your mouth. You guys prepare for that? You ready to get hit in the mouth over these jokes? It's not just cancel culture. People have broken hearts. And you better not step on those motherfuckers. Tonight, I'm going to speak to you honestly. We're going to have like a State of the Union in the Chicago suburbs comedy scene. I don't recommend honesty.
There's only two reasons you should ever be honest about your feelings. I gotta think of those reasons real quick. One of them. There's only two reasons you should be honest about your feelings when you're spazzing out. One is if you're on the other side of that shit and you got some wisdom to help people out. Feel free to tell people the truth. The other is if you're taking a leave of absence. If I ain't gonna see you for 6 months, feel free to tell me why. Otherwise, shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear about dealing with some shit. You either got closure or you don't. Figure it out or get the fuck out of here. I don't want to hear honesty otherwise. Now, I happen to be on the other side of controversy. So I'm going to tell you guys how to handle this shit. First thing is, there's a lot of people making Kobe jokes and people are mad at him. And the thing is, you can't be mad at people for being mad at you. You can't do it. It's wrong. It's like, if I punch you in the face and you punch me back, I'm like, what the fuck? I thought you were cool. I can't just hit you in the face whenever I want to hit you. And the problem right now is, you're not dealing with people. You're dealing with their pain. And pain is an emotion, and emotion isn't logical. So there's no explaining to someone why you pour salt on their heart. So just stop it and don't try to explain yourself. Keep laughing. Pretend it was a punchline. Here's the thing about dark comedy. And I'm a fan. These guys making jokes, these are my guys. Hate me if you want. But you have to understand, being a demon, being an awful person, your sense of humor is basically a fetish. You like the same kind of comedy as guys that like to eat poo-poo in their mouth. And Facebook is a public place. And it's cool to post pictures of you and your girl. It's not cool to post graphic pornography of you and your pitch eating your asshole out at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday. And we gotta get to a point where we have the same understanding about comedy. It might just be a little too fetish for the general public's taste. I gotta move down here. There's an old proverb. Native American proverb. It's about two wolves. Says everybody has two wolves in them. One that's made out of grace, love, and compassion, and one that's made out of anger, hate, and trolling. Do you know which wolf wins? It's the one you feed the most. And when people get mad... I had such a great point to take that to, and I got too drunk and can't remember what the fuck I was talking about. Alright guys, I think I got the lights. I'm adding on this. Here's what I want you to know. When I die, the moment you get the news, I want you to make fun of me. Ruthlessly, like you're a bunch of demons. I got a wife and a kid. I want you to make them cry. Fuck that bitch. Tell him he better toughen up. Because his daddy was a comic. And the reason is, the only reason I'm dying is to make you laugh. And that ain't much next to Jesus. But it's all my goddamn life afforded to, okay? So celebrate my life by talking about how I ain't shit. Tell my kid what kind of dicks I'm sucking in hell. Because that's what I live for. All right, my name's Ian Ellis. I love you. Good night. Yeah.
Good job, man.
Give it up for Ian Ellis one more time.
From Diego to the Bay. Hey guys, welcome to ianellis.podbean.com. Even though it's the outro, I've said that twice already. So tonight, Eric Parnell asked me to be on his podcast. I believe it's called Busting Balls. And that is what you heard, followed by my set. And here's the thing. I got way too turned up, and I had a bunch of stuff that I wanted to say in my set, but I was too turned up to get it out right. So before we get out of here, we're going to go over my notes, all the shit I wrote down to talk about at the open mic tonight. This is 2 weeks in a row where I got too turned up. Last week, I just went ham. I was having a hard week. People are dying. I'm working 6 days a week. It's been frustrating. And so I was doing shots. I was eating edibles. I was smoking whatever anybody put in front of me. And I got way too turned up. This week, I thought I was keeping it cool. But as you can hear, I've made it home. And I am still just a little bit too tipsy. So, I wrote all my notes in my notepad in no particular order. So right now there's a civil war going on in the Chicago comedy community over whether or not you can make jokes about Kobe and, you know, celebrity death jokes in general. The top note I have up here is, what if we reversed what people were saying? So, like, right now, to the people that are making Kobe jokes, there's a lot of people going, you're a hack, you're horrible, you ain't shit. Well, what if we reversed that and we went, you didn't make a Kobe joke? You're a hack. You're the one that's not taking a risk. You're the one who ain't shit. Now, I'm more of a moderate. I'm in the middle. But the argument can be made. You can't say that someone's a hack for making Kobe jokes because there's apparently a huge risk involved in that. And I admire anybody that takes a risk. I have God punishes us by giving us what we want. I think I talked about that in the podcast where Ari got what he wanted. To be a great comic, you have to be wrong. Now, comedy in its ultimate essence is an incongruity in reality. It's talking the wrong way. It's physically acting the wrong way. It's talking about how something isn't working the right way. At its core, it's something being wrong. So to be a great comic, you have to train your mind to be wrong. You have to always be thinking of, what is the wrong thing to say right now? What is the wrong way to act right now? And that's not very popular because everybody else is trying to go the right way. That's the herd mentality. Everybody else wants to be popular and wants to be liked. But if you really want to be funny, you have to figure out what's wrong. And what's valuable about what's wrong is when we laugh, it's out of discomfort. It's a coping mechanism. And so in our core, when we see something bad happen, like say a racist joke, some people laugh because they want there to be a victim. Some people laugh and they don't want there to be a victim. Either way, if you're laughing, you're uncomfortable because you know something is wrong. Something is incongruent. Something isn't the way reality is supposed to be. And that's like a little nugget, a little glimmer of truth. And that's like the most grandiose value that we can find in comedy, is that if you can figure out what's wrong, you can go into the darkness and the chaos and you can find something that's true, fundamental to our biology, indisputably true. And if you can turn that into wisdom, then you're a goddamn Jesus. Jesus. You can't be mad at people for being mad at you. If you don't want people to be mad at you, then you should have just done what the right thing is to do. If you want people to be mad at you, then you have to sit there and you have to take that. And you have to realize that you probably didn't intend to make them mad. And you don't have to apologize and you don't have to stop doing what you're doing, but you have to acknowledge that you hurt someone and you have to be willing to eat that. Even if that means like, hey, we're not going to agree on this issue, but what can I do to help you? Because you're clearly in pain. That's like the mature way to look at hurting people. I talked about in my set, the analogy of two wolves, a wolf that's made out of anger and a wolf that's made out of love. And the one that wins is the one that you feed the most. And I meant to say, if you're an angry person and you have a hard time dealing with that, when you get angry, when you feel it coming over you, and you don't always catch it in time, but if you do catch it in time, if you feel it, one way to deal with it is to start howling. Oh, 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 oh. And if you're still angry after making an ass out of yourself, then there's nothing I can do to help you. But that might be a way of disrupting your feelings long enough to stop yourself from doing something out of anger, which is something that you're always going to regret later. Because that ain't grace, and that ain't what being a good guy is. That's hate. Let me go through my notes here. I know you guys are just getting silence, the sound of my motor. One thing I was going to talk about is, like, we're so desensitized as a culture, it's really hard to be quote-unquote edgy. Because to be edgy, you have to be borderline demonic. And that's something I struggle with, because the shit we do in With Apologies is nowhere near acceptable in the comedy scene. And I kind of have one foot in both worlds. I'm retiring at 40, and then I'll be strictly With Apologies. But for now, I have one foot in both worlds. And I talked about how, like, having a dark sense of humor is basically a fetish, and we need to spread that idea out there. And I'm a guy who's too much in the internet, where, like, racist jokes and anti-Semitic jokes told with irony, hopefully, are just the norm. And I'm used to being in that world, but that world is not what normal people are used to. I had said in the past that anytime anybody comes after me in the future, I'm just going to troll them and fuck with them. One of the people that got mad at me was KB, and her and I are really, really close friends. So I called her and talked to her. I didn't want to, like, troll her and fuck with her and, like, be crazy. But a couple other people started commenting on my post, and then I posted up a picture, which I'm pretty sure Facebook took down for being too insensitive. But my response to them booing me was just to troll them and say, like, all right, you're mad. Well, how about you be madder? Because I've gotten to a point where I'm not trying to please you guys. I have my own sandbox. And here's the thing about having a show is, like, if you watch my show, you kind of have a say in what I do or don't do. But if you don't watch my show, you have no fucking right or opinion in my little sandbox. But at the same time, I need to be self-aware enough to know that, like, my sandbox is my sandbox, and people outside of that are not going to like, understand, or appreciate what it is we're doing, and I have to not be an asshole to those people for not understanding, because it's not for them. And I'm thinking I got to figure out, like, how to properly advertise what the show is, because I shouldn't be springing it on people that aren't interested in what it is I'm doing. Because I am looking for a very specific audience. I do want more people to come join us in the sandbox. But I understand that it's not for most people. And I don't want most people to see it. But I don't know how to advertise just to people that are, like, into the shit that I'm into. It's something I'm struggling with. If you guys have any thoughts on how I can, like, properly advertise my show to grow it, without showing it to the wrong people, so that innocent people don't have to be hurt, please email me at philipwaveradio@gmail.com, chicagoopenmic@gmail.com. Let me know. In terms of, like, being a sandbox, it's a me thing, not a we thing. And that's something that a lot of you guys with your dark comedy need to realize. It's a you thing, it's not a everybody thing. And you got to be comfortable with that. And if you're going to be a gangster, you have to be comfortable with just having your audience. You can't want everyone to like you, because everyone's not going to get it. Like, the majority of people, you know, they call them normies. Their points of reference in life are never going to line up with what you're doing. It's too much heavy lifting to try and explain to them what it is you're doing. They're just not going to be in on the joke. It's like trying to convince someone to get into some music that they're not into, or some kind of weird sex stuff that they're not into. Like, you have to realize that you are what you are, and that means you're extremely niche. And if you really want to be balls to the wall, I'm going to say whatever I want to say, you have to be comfortable with being niche. Don't be mad at people for not being into your weird shit. I think that's it for the notes I have. I had some other stuff here. The beginning of a crisis is always the worst. Like, when a crisis starts, that's the most temptation you have to be in panic mode. But that's the most important time to just be calm. And a lot of times, do nothing. Because within 24 to 48 hours, everybody kind of calms down and moves on. So if you find yourself being attacked, persecuted, whatever, just be still for 48 hours. Just be still and see how life goes on. It's like, when you die, life will go on, whether you're there or not. And when the world is coming at you, just be still. Pretend that you're dead, and the world will go on. Like, I don't think Ari is finished. I think he will be back in a year or so. He might take a hit on his income, but I think he's gangster enough that he probably won't care about that. I don't like that they were calling a lot of people hacks, because I feel like that's reductive. That's like calling people crazy. But I understand people are in pain, and they're just trying to label other people as something that's less than they can be mad at. And this time, like, you guys have the crowd on your side. Like, the world is with you. It's fucked up that people are making these jokes. But you don't have to be extra petty just because the world is on your side. Try to be reasonable even in your pain. That's something I would say to the people that are pissed off and mad. Because I see comics turn on comics, and it's like, you liked those guys yesterday. And you laugh at a lot of other shit that is equal or worse than what these guys are doing. So just take a breath and relax. Realize you're in pain and you need to take care of yourself. Yeah, I think that's all I had to say. Basically, guys, take a breath. If you're an evil comic, realize your shit's not for everyone. And you have some responsibility in not putting your shit in the wrong place. I'm not saying you can't say whatever you want to say. Feel free. But realize a lot of people aren't ready for it, and they're going to get mad. And you, if you're a good guy, also have some kind of responsibility to not be all pissy and shitty with people that don't like you. You have to sometimes just eat it and take that and learn and grow from it. On the other side, to all the people that are like calling out violence and death threats and consequences and this, that, and the other motherfucking thing, please try to realize that you're in pain right now, and that you're not making rational decisions, you're making emotional decisions, and that this time it struck a chord. And everybody has a chord. Everybody has something that they can't deal with. I made fun of special needs kids one night, and a lady that had a special needs kid went crazy. A lot of people didn't give a fuck. I dressed up as Hannah Gadsby and made rape jokes about a rape victim. A lot of people didn't give a fuck about that. But they're mad about Kobe Bryant stuff. And it's like, if you want to have integrity, you either have to be all the way in or all the way out, or at the very least, honest with yourself. And for your own mental health, sometimes it's good to just take some time off. When the Colorado shooting happened, one of my friends knew a girl that was killed in that. Now, I was making jokes about it all over the internet. One of my favorite jokes, somebody else wrote this, was like, you know, I'm making up these numbers. 113 people died in the Colorado shooting. 1,200 people just got murdered in a massacre on the out in Africa. Nobody's sure what movie they went to yet. It was a terrible joke. I thought it was very funny. One of my close friends was like, yeah, man, I saw some of your posts and I had to quit the internet for 4 months. And I felt terrible about that. And that's just the fetish thing, man. It's like forcing people to be into your fetish. I hope this has helped you guys. I'm sorry if I'm too turned up. Please check out the Bustin' Balls podcast and the Lobo podcast, and stay the fuck away from With Apologies if you are faint of heart or not ready for shit. I had a prank call I made on that show, and it went wrong, where the person hung up on me before I got to the punchline, and like, hanging up on me too early, what I said just came across as just like straight racism. And I'm telling you, I had a knot in my stomach for 2 days just thinking about, like, just feeling so fucking bad that what I was trying to do was misinterpreted. And, like, not that that person ever would have got what I was doing, but I didn't get the reaction out of them that I wanted, and so I left them with something that was disgusting and dirty that I didn't intend to leave them with. And it's like, that's where I need people like KB to rein me in and be like, hey, man, you're spazzing out and you're going too far, and you need to rein yourself in as a comic because your fetish is getting to be fucking way too dark. So, I don't know. Rein yourselves in. Be nice. Love each other. Ari will be back. I'm Ian Ellis. Check out the mixtape, Volume 11. Coming as soon as I have time to cut it together. Deuces.
Look at you, little butterball. Like to stop you with a biscuit. You're so cute. Ooh, Kyle.
If anybody thinks I'm actually looking at them when I'm doing this, I'm not. I'm only looking at one guy, him. It's the only guy I look at. I look at him in every show.